It's Freddie Prinze Jr. and Jeff Dye back in the ring. Wrestling with Freddie makes its triumphant return for an electrifying fourth season. Hey, Jeff. Are you ready to rumble our way into an all-new season of Wrestling with Freddy?
You better believe I have. I've been practicing my body slams, and I'm jacked.
All right, don't go injuring yourself now. We'll be highlighting the best stories and matches of the week in wrestling from AEW, WWE, and have one-on-one talks with the best talents in the world of pro wrestling.
Listen to Wrestling with Freddy on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Parents, if you've ever experienced bedtime battles with the kids, I'm going to let you into a little secret. The Koala Moon podcast has revolutionized over 20 million bedtimes, with parents like you calling it life-changing and the perfect nighttime routine. With original kids' bedtime stories and cozy sleep meditations, every episode has been specially designed to make bedtimes a dream. Listen to Koala Moon on the iHeartRadio app, on Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Discover a new educational and interactive podcast, Stories for Kids by Lingo Kids. Our episodes are packed with fun activities. Right, Elliot?
Oh, yes! We went shape hunting around the block, and we found spheres and cubes on the street.
That was great fun. Join Stories for Kids, the Lingo Kids podcast, inspiring you to learn while having fun. Listen to Stories for Kids on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Redraft Rookies. Let's talk to the pros. Welcome in, everybody, to Fantasy Pros. This is the Fantasy Football Podcast. It is me, Joey P. Joe P. Zapia. With me today is the King of Bros, Derek Brown, a.k.a. D-Bro, the Big Pond Energy Master himself. It's the one, the only, Andrew Erickson. And, of course, it's you. And today we're going to be talking about the rookies again. But this time, it's not about Dynasty. No, no, no. This time, it's about redraft. It's for all of us out there that are looking to win now and want to know if some of these rookies can contribute to our rosters and help with that goal of ultimately winning a fantasy football championship. And before we dig into all of those new pieces that are available for us to draft in 2022, I want to remind everybody we've got our giveaway still going on for that Deebo Samuel helmet over at fantasypros.com/contest. So you can get involved in that right now. All you have to do is be a subscriber of our YouTube channel, youtube.com/fantasypros. And when you are a subscriber of our YouTube channel, make sure you click that little bell for notifications. You screenshot that bad boy, and then you head over again to fantasypros.com/contest, and you could win that Deebo Samuel helmet thanks to our good friends at Pristine Auction. Also, don't forget to, if you can't get enough fantasy football, and I know that you can't because it's May and you're listening to the show, then you should be part of our community at Fantasy Pros on our Discord channel. It is free to join. It is awesome. It is fun. Over at fantasypros.com/chat. Again, that's fantasypros.com/chat to join the Discord, join the conversation, join our community. And when you are a subscriber of Fantasy Pros on the higher levels, you get access to so many more channels, including access to Andrew Erickson's hair tips and Derek Brown's beard tips. So between the two of them, you are all set for everything that you need. Gentlemen, we've talked about the rookies quite a bit, but now it's time to switch gears and talk about the short term. What can you do for me now? What can you do for me lately? And Andrew Erickson, we're going to start here with the running backs and kick things off with, of course, Breece Hall, who's that guy that everybody thought pretty much was the consensus RB1 on the board for the rookies. But he is RB20 right now in our ECR over at fantasypros.com/rankings. So let's talk about him. Let's talk about the impact he can make in this Jets offense and the impact he can make in fantasy teams in 2022.
I think that the ECR, I think it's a little low in terms of where they have him ranked at RB20. I think that it's looking at like a floor prediction. I think it's the classic, all right, you know, Breece Hall, RB2, let's put him in the back end RB2 range at, you know, RB20, which is basically kind of in that back end of the 20s there for Breece Hall. So for me, I have him up at 15 because I'm basically looking and viewing Breece Hall as essentially a first round running back. You know, that was taken in the first round. Now he did go in the second round, 34th overall, but as NFL teams start to get more intelligent and understanding the value of taking running backs in first round, it doesn't make a lot of sense. So the running backs that go at the top of the second round, we should be kind of viewing in a similar light, at least in my opinion, to the running backs that were taken in the first round, you know, many seasons ago. So obviously, it's not necessarily the same thing as Saquon Barkley going second overall with Breece Hall, but I do think that looking at some of the players last year, even if you draw parallels to a Javonte Williams, you know, Javonte Williams touched the ball last year 240 times as a day two running back selected in round two. Najee Harris was obviously taken in round one. He saw 380 touches. I don't think that that's in the range of outcomes for Breece Hall unless there's a mega injury to, you know, another Jets running back. But, you know, Hall is going to get the workload here. And when I was doing my research, kind of looking back at running backs since 2013, you know, running backs taken in the first round average around 237 touches per season. And every running back last year that had at least 240 touches was a top 15 running back. Now, when I say 240 touches, it sounds like a lot from a total standpoint. But when you break it down per game, it's 14 per game when you include that 17th game. So it's really not that much of a workload to imagine. I mean, obviously, when you think mega workload, you think Breece Hall, oh, he's got to touch the ball 20 times a game. It's like, no, he actually doesn't have to touch the ball 20 times a game to be a top 15 running back. So 14 per game, that's something that you could look for with 60-40 split. And I think that's like more like worst case in Breece Hall's. I think that he could get up to a 70-30 or an 80-20 split with Michael Carter potentially. So I think 15 is a better, I think better captures his upside in an offense that, you know, could take a step forward. You know, their offensive line is vastly improved. You have Zach Wilson entering his second year. Now, again, remains to be seen if he's going to take that leap, but he has the weapons around him. And the Jets, the moves that they've made, I mean, they added three tight ends. So to me, I think that they're going to try to at least run the ball effectively with Zach Wilson and put him in a position to succeed. So Breece Hall, I think, is someone that as long as he's in that range of 15 to 20 in draft day, like I will be gladly selecting him in fantasy drafts.
All right. Now you've got him at 15. ECR's got him at 20. Derek Brown, you've got him at 15 as well. And Andrew was just speaking to the potential upside there, which he makes a good case for, talked about the offensive line, talks about the game plan looking forward. But Michael Carter is still there, has a year ahead of him already in the offense in terms of understanding the playbook. And there's also Zach Wilson, who we have to worry about in terms of whether or not he has any jump year over year, because the rookie season was far less than thrilling, I think. So from an offensive standpoint, how much could the Michael Carter factor and the Zach Wilson factor hold Breece Hall back in redraft leagues this year?
Yeah, it's funny, Joe. I mean, we didn't compare ranks. We didn't talk about any of this before we got on the show. So seeing that Andrew is, and I are holding hands considering with Breece Hall, and Twitter gets so mad when I talk about range of outcomes for Breece Hall. Every single time you talk about it, they're like, oh, no, no, legendary comps can't get flushed down the toilet. And this has nothing to do with me hating Breece Hall. I think that the range of outcomes and Michael Carter being very involved is a concern, Joe. But look, I think that he's going to get enough volume to hit these benchmarks. And as much as I love trolling Twitter and just honestly talking about the range of outcomes for players, because, well, let's be honest, we're in rookie season and everybody wants the best case scenario for all the rookies, I'm with Andrew on this one. I think that Breece Hall is going to get plenty enough volume. And in similar fashion to Andrew's research, I looked all the way back to 2014. And you're looking at there's 14 rookie running backs with 230 more touches. Basically, out of that sample of rookies, you got 78% of them were top 16 options at the running back position or higher. Hell, 64% of them were top 10 options. So it's really hard. And I'm with this on that. I think Breece Hall is being ranked a little bit too low. Even with the Michael Carter concerns, I think he's going to get enough volume to be in this top 15 conversation. Hell, maybe even higher.
I know this is not the show where we compare all the rankings and things like that and ask you who would you rather, but I'm going to ask a who would you rather, because in the ECR, RB15 happens to be a guy who plays in the same stadium but for the Giants and not the Jets, and it's Saquon Barkley. So ECR right now has him at 15. You guys have Breece Hall at 15. Andrew Erickson, who would you rather have in redraft leagues this year, Saquon Barkley or Breece Hall?
Well, my rankings say Breece Hall because I have Saquon Barkley ranked at RB16. So, yeah, I'm going to go with Breece Hall right now. It's close for me. And I do think Barkley was kind of a low-key winner after the draft. The Giants seemed like they were fishing around for running backs, and they didn't have anybody. They have Matt Breida there as the primary backup. So it's not crazy to think that Barkley has, you know, this massive workload for him, and the Giants run him into the ground as they don't like to move on from him. So I could definitely see a scenario where Barkley does trump the Breece Hall here, but at the same time, I mean, how many times are we going to just retread this Giants offense over and over and over again? And is Gardner going to stay healthy?
That's why I'm asking, because it feels like we do it every single year. How about you, Derek Brown? Saquon Barkley at 15 or Breece Hall at 15?
I mean, I'll take the other side of the coin here. I have Saquon ranked higher, so he's my RB 11. Mm. So I'll go with Saquon on this one. I think the volume is locked in. There's no question about that. And regardless of what our outlook is for Saquon after this year, the Giants improving their offensive line, even if Daniel Jones is terrible, he's horrible. I mean, they have Tyrod Taylor behind him. He's showed at least last year he could be serviceable. Mm-hmm. So even if you believe that Dimes is god-awful, Tyrod Taylor could still be at least league average, and Saquon can eat this year. So I have him above Breece.
All right. I know we spent a lot of time on Breece Hall, but I think it's very important because Breece Hall is this guy that is being discussed as a fringe RB1 kind of back potentially. So in redraft leagues in 2022, it's important to break those guys down. It's also important to talk about the guy who got drafted right after him pretty much, which is Kenneth Walker the third. And Kenneth Walker lands in Seattle. Now, in the consensus, he is RB32. Derek Brown, you have him at 30. Wouldn't you know it? So does Andrew Erickson. You guys are so adorable. You guys should really consider working together, maybe doing a podcast or something. But Derek Brown, Kenneth Walker, obviously Rashad Penny there, the other situation where Chris Carson's still kind of flushing itself out. But this is a team that historically does like to run the football. So are you optimistic that Kenneth Walker in redraft leagues this year can carve himself out a niche and potentially even take over the starting job at some point in time this season?
I think it's all within the range of outcomes. I think Kenneth Walker, and as good as Penny was last year, it's not to say that Penny, neither one of these guys have to be amazing, or at least Walker doesn't have to be amazing in the passing game to be better than Rashad Penny was last year. I think it's really going to be these two guys probably working in tandem. So yeah, I mean, I have Walker and Penny both as RB3s right now. I know Seattle's offense is probably not going to be great. I think their offensive line with the additions that the Seattle has made in the draft is going to be a little bit better this year. And like you talked about, Joe, they're going to run the ball. And Pete Carroll, with all these running plays called, is probably going to be shirtless, just like he was for DK Metcalf's draft selection all season long, which... RIP our eyes if we have to look at that.
All right. Well, Rashad Penny was pretty good down the stretch last year. He certainly catapulted some teams into the playoffs. So, Andrew Erickson, how much does the Rashad Penny factor in to Kenneth Walker's value in 2022?
I think it's something that's probably going to be annoying in the beginning. I think that they're going to just do some weird deployment. They're going to use as many guys as they humanly can possibly use. And then they're going to realize that either Penny's going to get hurt, or they're just going to find that, you know, Walker is the better runner of the two guys. He probably is already the better rusher of the two. It's just a matter of, you know, if this team is trailing in all their games, if they're losing, like, how much are they going to be actually run the ball? And they can talk about running the ball a lot. They run slow. Like, they're a slow paced team. So, in our minds, we go, oh, they're going to run the ball like 40 times a game. It's like, probably not, because running, number one, doesn't stop the clock. So you run out of plays to run, and you're just going to end up kind of more disappointed than not when you look at the Seattle offense in general. So I think that ranking Walker here is a safe projection in terms of where you're getting. I don't think you should be. I just, like, don't overpay for guys on bad teams. Like, I'm sorry. Like, there are values that you can have with some of these players, especially you got, you know, receivers on bad offenses that are target leaders. Like, you can get values of guys that project to lead their team. And Walker in this range, I feel comfortable taking a shot on him. It's like, if he was up in the top 24, like, oh, he's locked and loaded. Like, he's going to touch the ball so many times. It's like, yeah, but this offense, like, where is the touchdown upside? Like, where is the receptions upside? I'm hesitant to just be like, oh, I'm all in. But at a RB3 price tag, I feel more comfortable. And I think it's always important with a lot of these players. You know, we talk about the players so much. It's like, well, what's the price? Like, that matters so significantly, because I can talk about being higher on a player and Derek Brown can be talking about being lower on a player. And then we look at the price and that could totally flip our perceptions based on, oh, I don't have to pay that. It's like, oh, like, that's how expensive he is. So that matters. And I think at this price, I think Walker, I think it's appropriate.
All right. And just a reminder for all you boys and girls out there, last year, Rashad Penny, week 14, half point PPR was RB3. In week 16, RB9, week 17, RB1, and week 18, RB2. So it was a pretty strong finish to the season for Rashad Penny. It's going to be an interesting situation to watch that all flush itself out. Then we have James Cook, right now RB44. Now we're getting different reports out there since he landed in Buffalo that he's going to be, you know, just kind of this guy who fits a JD McKissick role. I've seen that already published. There's certainly other people that think, hey, this guy has a chance to take over the entire thing away from Devin Singletary, who also ironically finished pretty strong last year. So, Andrew, this is another situation. This offense is a good offense. So do you and Juan invest in James Cook? Because he's at RB44. You have him right now as RB29. Now, that's a pretty big variance, and Debro has him at RB31. So you guys are much higher than the consensus so far.
Yeah, I think that it's buying into the offense of the Buffalo Bills. It's buying into the fact that Devin Singletary was the RB3 when they kind of just were like, you're going to be the guy moving forward. And what's not to stop the Bills from being like, hey, we got James Cook, like, let's make him the guy. And people will point at how James Cook was used at Georgia. And it's like, we are so bad at sometimes at projecting how guys are using college and how they're using the NFL. Like, Antonio Gibson played wide receiver in college, and we're still waiting for him to catch passes in the NFL. Like, he's still not doing it. So, like, you have to keep that in mind, that we can do all as much analysis as we want. Like, we're not in the coaching room, and we don't know what they're going to do with James Cook. And yes, we're getting reports that Izzy McKissick. And that's scary to think, because I would never think to rank McKissick as a top 30 running back. If he had signed there with Buffalo, there's no way I would rank him that high. So that's something that kind of keeps the back of my mind. Like, all right, if he is in this McKissick role, like, this ranking is definitely, like, way too high. But the fact that, you know, his ECR is 44, that means that I don't necessarily need to draft him as the RB30. I can get some value on James Cook, and you're buying into a player that is explosive. He's more explosive than Singletary or Zach Moss. That's what's been lacking in this Bills run game. Like, Singletary, he's been in between the tackles. Like, that's what he's been doing, and he's not a refined pass catcher like a James Cook is. So I think he's the extra element to their offense, and I think that the reason he's not as valued highly, I mean, you look at running backs taken in round two, basically since 2013, and 55% of them have finished as top 36 running backs. So more than half the time, a running back taken in the second round finishes as a top 36 running back. So if those are the odds I'm giving you, then you're going to bet, yes, James Cook is a top 36 running back. So therefore, he's ranked inside my top 36, and I give him an extra bump because he's on the Buffalo Bills offense. And if he gets involved around the goal line, catching passes from Josh Allen, I mean, James Cook could be running wide open underneath because they're worried about all the other receivers that are going deep because of Josh Allen's long ball. So I think that James Cook, yes, there's a risky floor to it. If he ends up being like JD McKissick, you're like, oh no. But hey, we saw JD McKissick at one time catch like 80 passes in a season. So there's a lot of ways I think Cook can offer value that may not just be, you know, on the surface. So that's why I have him where I have him ranked.
Derek, how do you parse that out? The difference between the potential of the Bills offense and what the workload might be for Cook in this offense, which could be more limited than we realize, or that we want it to be, at least in this first season.
Well, I think if you look at the Buffalo offensive design, and I've heard the comments out of Brandon Bean talking about he's a sub back and he's a passing downs back. I think James Cook walks into this situation owning the passing downs. Because like Andrew's talked about, and we could just illuminate, like, Singletary has been terrible in pass protection, like, god awful. His yards per route run have been amongst the league worst in running backs. So I look at Cook as he's going to own the passing downs. Okay, well, people are saying, okay, well, how good is that? Like, what's the potential for that? And you look at the offensive design, and I'm saying, like, we've seen this. This is a Buffalo team that legit will walk into some games and saying, all we want to do is pass. They were top three in neutral scope passing rates. So you're looking at a team that says, all we want to do is throw. And people are like, well, but James Cook's only going to be a receiving down back. Inside of an offense is going to throw at a top five clip. That's really good. That means a lot of snaps. So if we get James Cook, and not only does he get snaps, but he gets targets. And lo and behold, he outplays Singletary, and he gets the range of outcomes is he gets the Singletary role from last year's stretch run. That's in the range of outcomes. The floor here is he owns the passing down work and gets a role in the red zone, and he pays off in this price tag probably in a top five passing offense and a top five scoring offense. So I think there's a lot of different ways that you can go through this, but for a guy that I think is going to play every passing down snap, and he's in an offense that's going to just put up touchdowns in bunches, I mean, I'm totally fine ranking him here, because once you get outside the top 15-ish, 20-ish running backs, it gets really dicey really fast. And there's not a lot of players that have this type of range of outcomes of being the do it all back and one of the league's best offenses. So I think being aggressive on James Cook in that sense makes, I mean, that's where I stand with him.
All right, let's touch real quick on Isaiah Spiller, who ended up with the Chargers. He's at RB54 right now, D-Bro. You got him all the way at RB35. So with Austin Eckler being a guy that we've seen get banged up from time to time recently, and the inability of the Chargers to find anybody in a secondary running back role, no matter how many guys they've tried, they all seem to have failed. Why are you so high on Isaiah Spiller this year? Do you think he can fill that role? And is he one of the more intriguing upside handcuffs out there in 2022?
Yeah, I love Spiller and I love this landing spot. I mean, the Chargers have been yearning, screaming for somebody to be a running mate with Austin Eckler for multiple seasons since Melvin Gordon's been gone. Joshua Kelly was not that guy. Larry Roundtree was not that guy. And people can look at my Isaiah Spiller ranking and say, wow, that's aggressive. But again, I talked about when you get in this RB3 range, you're really going with players that you either foresee the role or good offenses. And like Erickson's talking about, I'm investing in a good offense here. So if he's going to be the running mate with Austin Eckler on a team that legit, like no matter how you parse it out, the Chargers are one of the best offenses in the league. Like they're fifth in points per game, and they were top 10 also in points per play and red zone attempts per game. So if Spiller is going to get this red zone role, if he's going to get a little bit active in the passing game, and regardless of whatever narrative you want to throw in here, they don't want to run Austin Eckler into the ground. They don't want him with a top 10 opportunity share. You go back to Joe Lombardi and how he's used running backs. You want to go talk about Detroit. You want to talk about New Orleans, things like that. I think that there is a lot of room for Isaiah Spiller to be a really good back, like not only to be one of the highest handcuffs in fantasy in that sense, but I think he's going to have a standalone role and be an RB3 for us from the jump.
All right. Now, Andrew, you've got him a little lower than D-Bro, but still higher than consensus. You've got Isaiah Spiller at RB43. So what are you yearning for from Isaiah Spiller this season?
Again, I like the landing spot when it comes to the offensive production, the offensive environment. You're hoping Spiller can, you know, stumble into the end zone, find opportunities if Eckler goes down. Because that's the thing. I always kind of looked at Spiller in that way. I always thought he was going to end up on a team. And he wouldn't be like the entrenched starter where, you know, you have like the Falcons or the Texans, where if Spiller landed there, his ADP would be even higher. His ECR would be even higher because people would be pegging him as a starter. I always thought he was better fitted as a, hey, Eckler's out this week. You know, he's dealing with an ankle injury. Like Spiller, you're going in, like you have the three down skill set. Like, yes, you're not going to be as explosive, as fluid as Eckler is in the passing game, but like you can get it done for, you know, a few week stretch here. So I think that has a lot of value into it. It's just a matter of just getting, because the Chargers have just been horrible at trying to, we've been trying to figure out who Eckler's backup has been for like the past three seasons. They've invested, you know, day three capital into guys like Larry Roundtree, like guys like Joshua Kelly, and they all kind of follow like a similar archetype where they're like bigger, more unathletic running backs. And you're just like, okay, like here we go. Like they're going with Isaiah Spiller again. And I think Spiller's better as a prospect than those other two guys. So I that's why I think that there is more confidence in Spiller than it was with those other two players. But I do want to get some type of, you know, maybe concrete's not the right word, but some type of, you know, hey, like, no, we like Spiller. We kind of view him as the next guy up after Austin Eckler, something like that to kind of make me feel a little bit more comfortable to move him inside my top 40 running backs. I have him at RB43. And then also, I am curious to see if they re-sign Justin Jackson. Like, he is still a free agent. He did really well as the backup last year for Austin Eckler. What's to say he doesn't re-sign with the team? So then that would be another hurdle that, okay, now how do we view Spiller? So kind of keeping it a fluid ranking. Again, we're allowed to change the rankings here, even though it is May. We can change them if we want to. So yeah, but I do understand the upside with Spiller if he does end up getting that role, which is definitely in his range of outcomes.
All right, real quick. Again, that's the key phrase here. Who else do you have on your radar in 2022 that you think can be a useful redraft running back because of either handcuff potential or maybe somebody who could just take the role outright? Who is that guy? 30 seconds, Andrew Erickson.
Tyler Allgeier for the Atlanta Falcons running back. Just a really bad depth chart. They have Cordarrelle Patterson there, and he's just not, like, is he a real running back? We don't know. Allgeier from BYU, really great after contact, and the offensive line is not great. So he can break some of these tackles and pick up yardage for the Falcons when they're losing by 28 points.
I think he got it in just under the 30.
Just
barely. All right, Derek Brown. Just barely. Derek Brown was timing. D-Bro, who you got? Same question. Could be the same guy, too. I don't care if it's the same guy. I want the right answers, not just different for the sake of being different.
I'll go Damian Pierce as a guy that I think he walks into the depth chart as the most talented player. And Pierce, we've seen he can pass protect. He's a plus receiving back. Even on a bad offense with a quarterback that's immobile like Davis Mills, he can get checked down for days.
Let's take a quick break in the action to tell you about Pristine Auction. My friends, there is no better place to go than Pristine Auction when you're looking for the coolest sports memorabilia that you're going to find anywhere. Everything there is authentic and backed by that certification of authenticity. And not everything there is super crazy expensive. I know some of you are on a budget, but that doesn't mean you can't have some fun and bid on some cool stuff. And when you use that promo code FANTASYPROS, you can start today and get $5 credits on us. That's right. $5, just start bidding with that promo code FANTASYPROS when you sign up at pristineauction.com. That's P-R-I-S-T-I-N-E auction.com. It's quick and free to register. They've got amazing stuff on there. We're talking helmets, jerseys. We're even talking about baseball stuff, basketball stuff, college football, you name it. They've got it over there. And it's not just sports memorabilia too. They've got cool wrestling things. They've got art. They've got so many things that'll make your head spin, but you can't get involved and you can't get the cool stuff in your house unless you start bidding today. And when you do, make sure you use that promo code FANTASYPROS at Pristine Auction. That's pristineauction.com. And now back to the action. Let's switch gears, gentlemen, to the wide receivers. And obviously the wide receivers have a lot to offer in this class. So let's start with Treylon Burks, who is right now consensus wide receiver 39, Derek Brown. You have Treylon Burks at 33. So talk to me about Burks and what you feel like his upside is, taking over basically a big chunk potentially with the absence now of A.J. Brown in that passing game. Yes, they did bring in Robert Woods, but at the same time, Burks is seen as that heir apparent. So what do you think his upside is in 2022 redraft?
I mean, I think overarching belief, and we're going to talk about all these different players from a rookie and our outlook for a redraft, but an overarching belief for me when looking back through the data, since 2014, you have 13 rookie wide receivers that have had 110 or more targets. Legit, 11 of those guys have been wide receiver 33 or better in fantasy points per game. Seven of them wide receiver 20 or better. So if we could see pathways for that type of target share or raw target volume for these guys, it's really hard to rank these guys outside of being like wide receiver three options. And that's where I look at Treylon Burks and a few of these other guys. I think that you look at this passing attack and what he's going to be as being the AJ Brown heir apparent. It's not hard, even though they're a run first offense, to sniff 110 plus targets, considering one, who he's competing with, and two, just the offense and the role he's going into and in general. So yeah, I mean, I'm going to be above consensus. I think consensus is really low on a lot of these rookies.
All right, you're above consensus, and Andrew Erickson is above you at Treylon Burks, wide receiver 29. So Erickson, talk about Burks, why you have him so high in your rankings for this season in redraft.
Yeah, it's all the same reasons that Debro listed out, you know, the opportunity that he has from day one, from the get-go. You know, who else are they going to throw the football to? And it's not one of those where he's kind of in there and you're just kind of like praying that he's good. You're like, oh, like, because we see this all the time with guys that, you know, get opportunity and then they just don't get the ball because they're not good and the team just runs the ball more. Like, I guess the Titans could go that direction if things don't look good for Burks, you know, during training camp and they just run the football with Derrick Henry. But I mean, it seems like Burks is going to be the guy there. They don't really have a lot of established players. I mean, Robert Woods, okay, like we cannot forget about how the Tennessee Titans are that franchise where, as Voldemort would say, veteran receivers go to die. Like every veteran receiver, like Andre Johnson went to the Titans. Randy Moss played on the Titans, gone. Most recently, Julio Jones went to the Titans, gone. And Robert Woods is now following in that footsteps of these veteran receivers.
A little scary.
Come to Tennessee to basically turn to dust. And that's what happens. So Treylon Burks, luckily he's young, he's a rookie. So I think they'll have a much better chance of having a significant impact. And like Debro said, I mean, these first round rookie receivers, they should all be ranked, in my opinion, in the top 36. Like just looking statistically, looking back, like that's where the hit rate is for these guys that more often than not 55% of the time they're hitting they're finishing as top 36 guys, especially when you look at guys taken in the first round. So anytime, like if you're drafting best ball or whatever, and you're seeing these guys have ADPs in the 40s, it's like, keep drafting them. Like they should be in the top 36. And then that's where you're getting fair value. So right now, I think that all rookie receivers, especially the guys taken in the first round, are all being undervalued right now. I mean, look at the impact we've seen from some of these guys coming out all past year. Like they're all hitting the ground running. And people, it's almost like we're still afraid to get hurt when, you know, 10 years ago, it took rookie receivers forever to do anything. But they are coming in so much more decorated and seasoned, ready for that NFL game, that I think the public, and we're a little bit behind. It's like, no, we got to adapt, and we need to put these guys, we need to push them up the rankings now and not wait for them to blow up in week three. Oh, well, what do you know? You already have them on your roster. So I think that's the move.
I see. And for Robert Wood's sake, I hope he's very careful in the clubhouse, because he doesn't want to turn a corner and all of a sudden say, Avada Kedavra, Robert Woods. You're an old wide receiver. Avada Kedavra. Very dangerous. That's my Voldemort there for the YouTube channel. Let's move on to Drake London, who ironically is not Derek Brown's wide receiver one in a redraft. I thought he might be, but he wasn't. Drake London is wide receiver 42 in the ECR. Erickson, you've got Drake London over at 30, same as Debro. So once again, you guys are spot on, and yet you say you don't get together and make these rankings. I guess great minds think alike. Andrew, let's talk a little bit about Drake London. The quarterback has got to hold this guy back. I'm sorry. The offensive line does too. I'm excited about Drake London, but I'm a little closer to the ECR. So why are you guys ahead of it here? I know you make a good case for the wide receivers coming in, the rookies the last couple of years and making a big impact, and I get that, but you know, it's a lot easier to make an impact when you have Joe Burrow throwing the football or Kirk Cousins. This is still Marcus Mariota throwing the football to you. So sell me, please, on Drake London at wide receiver 30, because I think you have to.
Well, I think for me, it's a matter of the guy's going to get peppered with volume. The Falcons are not like, you know, where we're talking about the Titans. The Titans are an offense that is happy to run the football. That the Falcons aren't going to be in that situation. Like, they're going to have to throw the ball. And I mean, look, the guy's going to see 10 to 12 targets every single week. And okay, maybe he catches six of them, but still, like that's exactly what you want from a rookie receiver. Like, he's going to get a lot of volume in this offense. And you would argue that Marcus Mariota has the best two types of players that he would need, having a Kyle Pitts, having a Drake London, these basketball archetype players, where he's allowed to be inaccurate and he's allowed to kind of like airball a little bit because he knows this guy can go up and get the ball. So Drake London, obviously someone they could also feature in the red zone, you know, when they hopefully end up getting into the red zone, you know, who knows how often they'll be there, but they didn't really use Kyle Pitts in that capacity last year. We'll see if that changes, but you know, Drake London has been that guy. And you know, part of the thing, it's important to remember this, you know, Drake London kind of gets knocked down because people are, you know, concerned about his athleticism, like how fast is this guy? And you know, I was kind of thinking about this and said, you know what? It's okay that he's a guy that maybe won't make as much, you know, yardage after the catch or break down these like 80-yard touchdowns, because like if the guy is catching passes, you know, as a possession receiver, he's moving the chains. Like we play in leagues where you get points for catches. Like, it's okay that he's catching, oh, 10-yard out. Oh, 10-yard out. Oh, 10-yard out.
What's the name of this format?
I know, it's bizarre, but like, we
point
fall in
for exception, you say.
We fall in love with these, like, these big plays, but when you actually, like, do the math out, it's like, hey, man, like, this guy just caught, like, five passes for 50 yards during the entire drive instead of catching that one 50-yard pass. Hey, one of them is worth more points than the other. So I think that that is a reason to be higher on Drake London, because I think that he's going to be a guy that's going to move the chains a lot for the Falcons.
Now, I'm going to tread carefully here because I know Derek loves Drake London, and I love him too. I do. Believe me, I can't get past the O-line that basically buried Matt Ryan 6 feet under the turf in Atlanta last year. And then people are stepping on his hand on top of it. And then Marcus Mariota, who has struggled at the NFL level, throwing the football, making his reads. And for a rookie wide receiver to come in 2022 and have an impact, it's just a hard sell for me. So go for it. Give it a try.
Volume and talent. So Mariota has the mobility that Matt Ryan wishes he had at any point in his
career. Last year, he definitely wished it too, because he's getting murdered back there.
But the other part of this is that the rookie wide receiver sample that I threw out here earlier, so those 14 guys from 2014, let's go through the laundry list of quarterbacks that supported those guys as top 33 options of fantasy points per game. All right, Waddle was getting balls from Tua. Amon-Ra St. Brown got balls from Jared Goff. Now you go back to 2020, Kirk Cousins. You go back even farther, Amari Cooper put up a top 30 season with Derek Carr. Then you keep going back even farther, Joe. Cam Newton,
Carr and
Eli
Cousins
Manning
are decent NFL quarterbacks. Mariota is subpar. Jared Goff went to a Super Bowl. I know we all want to make fun of Jared Goff, and that's fair. But okay, he went to a Super Bowl, for God's sakes. Marcus Mariota could not keep his job from Ryan Tannehill when he was in Tennessee. I'm just saying, like, that's where I struggle. That's, you know, you can have all the talent in the world. If you can't get the guy the football, it becomes a difficult situation. So especially short term, long term, I'm all in, baby. I'm with you. I love the guy. He's great. But short term, how do we get that return on where you guys have him at wide receiver 30, correct? That's where you have him. Yes.
Yep. He's going to gobble up volume, Joe. Like, they're going to use him on screens. Okay. They're going to use him in the slot. Like, Arthur Smith is going to draw up plays for this guy. You don't draft a wide receiver inside the top 10. And regardless of Mariota, I'm not even saying that Mariota has to be fantastic. Like, I'm not putting Drake London as much volume as I think he's going to get in multiple projection sets, have him above 120 targets. That is so much volume that Mariota can be not great. I mean, almost borderline bad to support him and Kyle Pitts. Cause I mean, outside of that, who the hell are they throwing the ball to? Okay. What? Maybe Patterson, Alameda Zacchaeus. No, thank you. The rest of that depth chart. That's a big no. So I think that London has the talent to both garner volume as well as do something with the ball in his hands after the catch that Mariota's mobility is going to negate some of that pressure that you're worried about as well. Okay.
If Baker Mayfield was a quarterback, would you feel better about it?
I think it's a push, to be honest. I mean, okay. I think Baker can deliver. Maybe the mobility is not there, obviously, but I think that he can deliver a more accurate ball than Mariota.
Fair enough. All right, let's move on to the next guy here on the list. And it was Garrett Wilson. D-Bro, you've got him at wide receiver 34. The consensus right now on Garrett Wilson is 45. I'm going to go back and kind of rehash the old argument here about Zach Wilson. And Elijah Moore had some moments last year, but they weren't all with Zach Wilson. They were with the likes of many decorated backup quarterback in the NFL. So Garrett Wilson at 34, a very polished wide receiver. But once again, how much is there for him in terms of volume to return on that wide receiver 3 range, which is where you have him already?
Yeah, I mean, I think Wilson, like slotting him anywhere from like in this wide receiver 3 range to a high wide receiver 4, it all comes down to what do you think, like who's going to lead this team in targets and what do you think about Wilson? And right now I have him above Elijah Moore because I think that one, the Jets have told us that they went and selected Wilson inside the first round handedly. And two, it comes down to like skill set. I think that like, anybody can go back and check out the episodes of like, I've talked about Garrett Wilson, multiple mock episodes, basically get the ball in his hands and he is going to be a hand in glove fit for this offense. Use him on shallow crossers. His yak ability takes over. And I think that he could easily pay off on this price. Even if Wilson's not fantastic, I think that this is another opportunity where we're talking about, okay, what are we buying into here? We're buying into volume and we're buying into talent. And there's only so low that I can get on Garrett Wilson, even if I'm not high on pretty boy Zach Wilson.
All right. You kind of split the difference here in between. So Andrew Erickson, you are at 40 when it comes to Garrett Wilson. So to me, that's kind of reasonable. Like you're saying to me, there's upside here in redraft leagues, but I'm not ready to lock him in as a wide receiver 3 yet. Is that kind of your thinking on Wilson?
Yeah, it's very, very price agnostic when it comes to Garrett Wilson, because I see the path where he steps in as the number one guy and he supplants Elijah Moore and it's great and we love it. He's really talented. He gets open at will. But then there's the other side of the coin where Zach Wilson just crumbles. No one can move in this offense at all. Like, everyone is terrible. So, like, you have to weigh those things when you're drafting him. So, if he gets steamed up, like, whoever the receiver that just gets the most, like, hype is probably the one I'll fade, because I'll just be like, I'm just going to take the better values. Because I think that a lot of these, especially, I mean, he was a top 10 pick. Like, the track record of top 10 picks at receiver, basically going outside of Tavon Austin, is really good in recent years. Like, those guys have delivered immediately for their teams. So Garrett Wilson has that working in his side, but you also have Elijah Moore. He was like the wide receiver 2 in his last 6 games played. And, you know, I kind of threw Elijah Moore to the wolves a little bit when Garrett Wilson first got drafted. And then I kind of like went back and looked at Moore. I was like, man, like I can't just like, I can't like disregard Moore like that because of how good he was as a rookie, especially with the hodgepodge of Josh Johnson, Mike White. And then, Zach Wilson. It's just like whoever was playing quarterback for the New York Jets last year. Like, I don't even know. So Garrett Wilson, I have him kind of in that, you know, backhand wide receiver 3 range because I recognize the talent. But I also understand that the situation does matter a lot. And I'm an advocate for drafting receivers on good teams and players on good teams. And if he's cheap and I think he could be the leader, okay, I'll take a shot on him. But if he's going to get steamed up and get more expensive, then I'll probably have to try to fade away from him.
All right. Next on our list is Chris Olave at wide receiver 52. Now, Erickson, you've got Olave at 46. Derek has him at 44. So you guys are basically in that same universe. Is Olave's value tied to a healthy, productive Michael Thomas, in your opinion? Because if he's on the field, that certainly makes Olave's first year a whole lot easier on the rookie.
Yeah, I think that it's really important whether they're getting an update on Michael Thomas. I know that some of it's been more ambiguous as of late. Like, we're getting reports, oh, like, his ankle's like not okay. Like we don't know. Like, there's a lot of question marks about this offense. And I mean, I still have question marks about what this offense is going to look like. Are they just going to run the ball? Are they going to be aggressive downfield? Like, I know we've seen Winston fuel a lot of great fantasy seasons from wide receivers, but was that a, you know, part of being in the Bruce Arians offense? No, you know, risk it, no biscuit. Like, that's not the New Orleans Saints offense. It wasn't what the Saints did last year with Jameis Winston. Could it change? It's possible. But we don't know. So I think taking a leap of faith of like ranking Olave as like, you know, top 36 guy, like immediately, I think that's a little risky. Whereas, okay, if he's the complement to Michael Thomas, we know that he can win downfield. So that's kind of where I feel comfortable ranking him here in like the wide receiver 4 range.
If Thomas isn't healthy, D-Bro, let's say he's going to miss the opening of the season or something like that. Does that move Olave up or down in this ranking?
I mean, it's going to shoot him up. I mean, you put him in basically the same kind of tier. If Thomas is going to miss some time, I'm going to put him in the same kind of tier.
But you're also putting a rookie then against, you know, the better corner too, just theoretically most of the time.
I mean, that's theoretical, but you also have a team. And I know Sean Payton is gone right now, but Pete Carmichael's been there for the entirety of this, and they could easily move Olave in the slot. And if the corner's not going to follow him, get him off of the top coverage as well. But the other thing it comes down to is he's going to see a big bump in volume. So I'll move him up right there behind Drake London and Treylon Burks in the wide receiver 3 range. If we're saying that, like, okay, MT is going to miss some time, then he's going to more likely get in that 110, 115 target range. And that's probably going to boost him, as long as Winston doesn't just crap his pants and fall apart. He's going to boost him up into that wide receiver 3 range.
All right, let's move to the next guy on the list. And we've basically created this entire show just to have this conversation. I'm just going to be completely honest about it. Sky Moore, Kansas City Chiefs, wide receiver, 58 right now in the consensus. Derek Brown, you have him at 32. Andrew Erickson has him at 32. Derek Brown, you have him at 39 in your rankings. So let's talk about the upside, because of all these receivers, we keep talking about the question marks of Mariota, the question marks of Zach Wilson. I got no questions about Patrick Mahomes. My only question is, how many times is he going to target Sky Moore? Because the other guys, I got questions about an aging Travis Kelce just a little bit. I've got questions certainly about MVS, who can't seem to catch a football, as you alluded, the frying pan hands. And then you've got Juju Smith-Schuster, who has not been productive in 2 years. So, Derek Brown, what is the sky the limit for Mr. Moore here, potentially? Dad jokes aside,
top 15, top 20 wide receiver. Ooh. I mean, I really think, and I thought I was gonna walk into this podcast and be the guy sitting here like, look at Sky Moore, yes. And then we put our ranks into the sheet and I'm like, crap, Erickson's higher than me. Like, I need to go adjust this a little bit. Like, I mean, I felt like I was pumping the brakes just a tad bit with Sky Moore, but I think that type of ceiling outcome is definitely there. He could be the number two option in this Kansas City passing attack from week one. And I'm sorry for all the Juju Smith-Schuster truthers, stands, still believers out there, but Juju has not been good over the last 3 to 4 years. You can only put so much of that on Ben Roethlisberger. For a player that has seen his yards after catch per reception drop in each one of the last 4 seasons, as well as his yards per route run, you could only sit here and say there is so much Roethlisberger to sit here and put that on. Deontay Johnson hasn't had a problem, people. Sorry, you can't sit here and wish all of that away and lean on the fact of Juju being, oh, he's still young, he's got promise. Come on. The more talented player at this juncture of their careers is Sky Moore. So I'm willing to invest, and if I need to bump up this and be a little more aggressive on his ranking, I will happily do so.
All right, Andrew Erickson, your thoughts on Sky Moore, who has certainly the quarterback, the offense around him, and the opportunity to really be a huge return on investment, maybe even a league winner if everything breaks right. And if he's not, I don't know if he kind of lingers around this current ADP. It might not cost you anything to find out. If you're wrong, so what? You can move on. But if you're right, Andrew Erickson, this could be a league winner potentially.
Yeah. And I think the only reason, like, why isn't he not ranked higher by the ECR? It's because he wasn't a first round pick. Like, that's the reason. Like, why, like, wasn't, like, we all know the landing spot is the best one out of all the rookie wide receivers. But everyone is like, well, you know, you got to, like, consider, like, he was a second round pick. And I'm like, yeah, like, Deebo Samuel, he was a second round pick. AJ Brown, he was a second round pick. DK Metcalf, he was, I mean, maybe the NFL made a mistake. Like they do all the time. Like, so for me, it's like, especially when you look at the numbers, you know, when I went back and did my research since 2013, you're looking at, you know, there's usually like one round two guy that kind of sneaks into the top 36 every single year. And when you do the math out, there were 13 guys taken between the first two rounds. It's a 55% hit rate that a player taken in round one or two ends up being a top 36 receiver. So you could just blindly take, you know, the six receivers that were taken in the first round, except for Jameson Williams because he's hurt. And then you add in one more guy from the second round. Who's the favorite? Of course, it's Sky Moore. Like he's obviously the clear candidate that would make the leap in the top 36 based on when he was drafted and basically on the landing spot. So I think it's just people are not being aggressive enough to get a guy that's attached to Pac-Man. It's going to take one 10-target game in week one, and we'll be like, oh, well, now we got to rank him in the top 24. So I think that it's easy for Sky Moore to be ranked this high.
Well, I've got him at 29, just so you guys know. I'm higher than both of you. So there you go. There you have it. Go ahead, D-Bro.
I mean, when you're competing with targets against Marquez Valdez, Scandling, Mecole Hardman, and Juju Smith-Schuster, I mean, you really got to worry about it, right? Like, come on, man. Like, I don't understand the ECR on this one. I don't get it at all. And again, I need to apparently bump mine up because I thought I was going to walk in here and be really high on the sky, but I'm lagging.
If you
want
to get drafts with us, you know, if you're drafts with us, you're going to have to bump it up. That's the only difference. And, you know, look, to me, you made that great argument earlier, Derek, about talent of Drake London. And it's, you have all the talent in the world. If you don't have the guy throwing you the football at the end of the day, that's the difference maker. That's the guy in redraft you need. You need the guy who's got talent, but maybe even more importantly, the opportunity and the guy to throw you the football consistently and well. If you have that, then you have a path to being a wide receiver too, potentially in this rookie class, or even more. Who knows what could be for him? All right, let's talk about these last guys at wide receiver real quick. We've got to loop them together. You tell me who your favorite is. Let's start with Christian Watson, wide receiver 63 in consensus. Jahan Dotson, wide receiver 64. And then Jameson Williams at wide receiver 65. So these guys right now, I think this is kind of like the placeholder, I feel like, ranking in ECR, where everybody says, okay, these guys all have opportunity. Let's wait until we get some good news out of camp. Let's wait till preseason. And then these guys will probably start going up boards. You guys right now with these wide receivers, Derek Brown, you have got Christian Watson at 45. Erickson has him at 46. Again, very close. Jahan Dotson, you've got a 59. Erickson has him at 52. Williams, you have at 56. Erickson has a 49. So of these three, who are you most likely to be interested in 2022 redraft leagues? Derek.
People need to just go ahead and rewind the podcast. Rewind the podcast to those few last few points you made about opportunity and talent and a really good quarterback throwing you the ball. And you just laid out my argument for Christian Watson perfectly, Joe.
All right. Well, I'm glad I could be of help somehow on the show to you. Andrew Erickson, of these three guys, who are you more likely, or should I say most likely, to draft in redraft leagues in 2022?
Yeah, I want to give some love to Jahan Dotson, because I don't think that he's getting enough credit for the immediate impact that he could have. I mean, he's going to be a full-time starter in the Washington offense with Curtis Samuel not reliable with his injury history. Dyami Brown didn't do anything as a rookie. And yeah, I get Carson Wentz is not like this guy that's amazing, but he can support. He showed that he could support fantasy weapons. Like, Michael Pittman was good last year. Like, a lot of these situations are not like that, where Marcus Mariota, like you mentioned, and it's why you have reservations about Drake London. It's like, dude, like, Marcus Mariota, we haven't seen him do anything for so long. Whereas Wentz, last year, he supported an offense. Like, Jonathan Taylor was great. We had Michael Pittman was great. Like, yeah, he's not, like, supporting, like, 12 different guys, but he's shown that he can do enough, kind of like in a Jared Goff type of way, where it's kind of gross when you, like, when you actually kind of think about it. But it's like, you look at the numbers, like, okay, like, Wentz really isn't, like, that bad. And he's way better than what they had last year. Like, I'm sorry. Like, I don't think Wentz is that great, but what they had last year with Heineke was horrible in Washington. So I think it's going kind of under the radar in Dotson. You know, what if he emerges as that security blanket for Carson Wentz, like operating out of the slot. You know, they didn't re-sign Adam Humphries. So there's a role in this offense where he can immediately step in and be the number one slot receiver on the offense. And I just think that, I mean, he's a first round pick. And people are not registering that in his mind. Like, there are people in early best ball leagues that are taking guys like Rashad White, Isaiah Spiller, and Damian Pierce after Jahan Dotson. Those are day three running backs that have like no ties to them whatsoever. Like, we don't even know if those guys are going to play. Like, we really don't even know. Whereas you have a first round pick in Jahan Dotson who is willing to skip his graduation to be at practice. That's the guy I want on my team.
There you go. Skipping school. That's what Andrew is going to tell his kids. It's okay. As long as you show the football practice, skip all the school you want. I'll go one better. I'm going to use Andrew's argument earlier to support my guy of these three, which is Jameson Williams, which is who's the cheaper one. Yeah, it's going to be Williams. And I think he's going to stay cheap because of the injury and because it's the Lions is because it's Jared Goff. So where I think Watson's going to fly up boards, I think Dotson will have some movement, especially as a good preseason. We might not see Jameson Williams in the preseason game. And if we don't, his draft value in 2020, it's going to just continue in 2022 to just sink to the bottom there. And I'm happy to snatch it up and see what happens, because 6-8 weeks into the season, if he can kind of figure it out in terms of talent, we're just talking about talent, he's the most talented guy there. In Superflex, gentlemen, the quarterback's not too thrilling in terms of the rookie class. Kenny Pickett's probably that one guy. Andrew, what are your thoughts on Kenny Pickett in redraft leagues and obviously Superflex this year? He is the consensus 32 quarterback on the board right now. You've got him at 26, a little bit higher, I believe. Oh, no, sorry. Derek has him at 26. You've got him at 31. My apologies. So you guys are kind of in the same range. First, I want to talk to you, Andrew, about you believe that he's going to be the day one starter, correct, Kenny Pickett?
Yes. Yeah, I believe that. I would probably rank him higher. I actually had thrown in my just like regular redraft rankings for this, because my redraft rankings are not the same at quarterback as Superflex, because I value the position very differently, where Kenny Pickett to me is pretty useless, honestly, in a one quarterback league. Like, I really don't think that he's a floor play. It, you know, doesn't really matter. You know, he doesn't move the needle. You could just pick someone off the waiver wire instead. But in a two quarterback league, because he's a warm body and I know he's going to start games, like, that is much more valuable to me. So I would rank him higher, probably closer to where Debro has him at quarterback 26. So, and that's just something to reply. I don't think that your one quarterback ranking should be identical to your two quarterback, because I think it's a lot different.
That's fair. That's a fair assessment. Derek Brown, your thoughts on Kenny Pickett here? You've got him a little higher on your board at 26. So you must assume as well that he is going to be the day one starter with this kind of a ranking, right?
Yeah, I have him ranked over Trubisky. I think he's starting. I think that the only way that you look at Trubisky having a range of outcomes, like, this is going to be obviously a camp battle, but you're looking at a team that just invested a first round pick into Kenny Pickett. So Trubisky's not just got to like play to a similar level to win that job. He has to like handedly outplay Kenny Pickett. If it's at all close, they're going to probably nod with Kenny Pickett to start the season. So, I mean, I think that he's going to win the starting job. And this is about where you look at Pickett. I mean, he's not going to be a difference maker, even in Superflex. At the upper range of his outcomes, you're looking at like a mid QB2 type of performance. Like, I don't see anything that's going to vault him higher than that, whether it's neutral script passing rates or just his talent and the offense around him. I think they really could baby him. And you see a lot of like early career Roethlisberger stuff going on where they lean on the run and they just ask him to be functional.
And the other quarterbacks, we got Desmond Ridder, QB 36 in ECR, Matt Corral at 38, Malik Willis right now at 40. I mean, look, maybe Desmond Ridder takes over that job at some point. That's possible. Maybe in deeper Superflex leagues, you could take a look at Desmond Ridder and stashing him as a third quarterback if you think that potential is there for him, or if he has a really good, you know, training camp and a lot of positive work in the preseason. But it's really tough to see any of these other quarterbacks in the rookie class making a 2022 impact, even in the Superflex.
Let's dig into the listener mailbag.
Let's get to some listener mailbag questions, and let's start with Stick Stomper. With a retooled receiving core in Kansas City, is Travis Kelce poised to give us another huge fantasy season? He has to be top five in targets at the end of the season. No. Derek Brown, your thoughts. Can Travis Kelce pick up the slack here and fill this void? Maybe it's not Sky Moore. Maybe it's all Travis Kelce again. What do you think?
I mean, I think there's only so many targets he's going to absorb. I mean, I think that he's going to be, I mean, he's a top two tight end option, regardless of how you slice it. I think his volume is going to be fine. So I'm not worried about him at all.
All right, let's get to Wells Bob's at Twitter, or Wells Babs. Sorry, do my best here with these. In a dynasty startup, Andrew Erickson, do you include rookies in the startup draft, or do you hold a separate draft solely for rookies and determine the draft order through randomization? So what do you do? You're starting up a dynasty league. Now that everybody's been drafted, if you're having it now, do you do the rookie separate, or you just loop everybody in together at this point in the year? What do you do, Andrew?
I mean, I like having the separate rookie draft personally. I think that it's more fun, and the focus is so much on the rookies that you're not as overwhelmed by, you know, having the rookies kind of thrown into the pool with the veteran players. And I've always done the most trades in rookie drafts, honestly. Like when I look, it's so much easier for people to maneuver up and down the board because everything is a little bit more simple. Like you have your picks, you know who the players are you're looking at. It kind of mimics being more like you're in the real NFL draft. Like there are so many trades that I've have done, you know, over the past week in my dynasty rookie drafts. I know I've gotten some trade offers from you guys. You can't have Rashad Bateman. So yeah, that's how I feel.
There you go. It's tough to make trades with
just
each other.
Had
you
know to sneak trades? It in there.
You know how many trades I fended off for Sky Moore in that draft we were in? Oh my goodness, and Derek Brown. I was like, God, stop calling me, bro.
It's gonna happen, Joe. Just go ahead.
I love it.
Just grit your teeth and let it happen. It's gonna be nice. It's gonna happen, okay?
Within 8 seconds of each other texting me the same thing about the same guy. And I'm like, guys, ladies, slow down. I can see somebody on Friday and somebody on Saturday night. There's plenty of me to go around. Let's get to the last one here from Gareth_Blues on Twitter. He says, the question is, how do you think the running back situation in Kansas City will play out? This is a fascinating one, boys. So give me your take. I'm going to ask, reframe this question in a way. Who has the most fantasy points in half PPR from the Kansas City backfield this year? Derek Brown, who's the name? Is it Ronald Jones? Is it Clyde Edwards-Helaire? Is it somebody else? Who is it?
Oh, God, this is going to be gross. I'll still side with CEH. Look, you were talking about frying pan hands earlier. I mean, that's Ronald Jones, baby. Like, he's going to factor in here, but if there's any kind of pass catching upside to be had, I think it's going to be CEH. So, I'm a glutton for punishment. I must love pain. I guess I'll go Clyde Edwards here, but I can't go Rojo.
Andrew Erickson?
I mean, as much as I'm tempted to shout out your guy from Rutgers, Isaiah Pacheco, I'll probably side with it's probably gonna be whoever's healthy, honestly. That's probably gonna be the right answer.
I
thought you're gonna go Derek Gore here. Come on.
I'm gonna go with Edwards-Helaire though. I think that he, you know, at once a time, like he showed the ability to catch passes out of the backfield. Now that remains to be seen if he's ever going to translate it to the NFL level, but they didn't really add anyone that profiles like that besides Jerrion Ealy, who they signed as an undrafted free agent from Ole Miss. So that role is still up for grabs, quote unquote. And Ronald Jones, as D-Bro mentioned, is not going to probably won't get that role as a pass catching guy. So if Edwards-Helaire can turn into some type of like Jerick McKinnon was down the stretch last year, like Darrell Williams, and they haven't re-signed either of those guys. So maybe CH has turned a corner, probably not. But that's what I would probably say. It's weird. It's one of those things where you think it's a high-powered offense, but it might just end up being like, so Ronald Jones is Zach Moss, and Edwards-Helaire is Devin Singletary from the beginning of last year, and then they both don't do anything.
I really did not want to end the show on such a down note. I have a voice now, because that was depressing.
I'll give you something nice about it, though, Joe. I want CEH just to succeed this year, just so I can watch Twitter burn. So I can watch all the takes and stuff to burn to the ground.
Just to watch Twitter burn.
That's fair. That's fair too. We're all here for the chaos. We all just want the violence, man.
There you go. I am the Loki of fantasy football after all. All right. Make sure if you've got more questions about rankings that you go no place else but fantasypros.com/rankings to check out in the latest. The guys are always updating their rankings, as am I, as all the news is filtering in. And again, this is all for redraft, all the rookie conversation. Then we've got great content revolving that over fantasypros.com. And speaking of which, while you're there, you might as well check out the contest at fantasypros.com/contest. That Debo Samuel helmet is not going to give away itself. So make sure you get in on that. All you have to do, again, is be a subscriber to our YouTube channel, youtube.com/fantasypros. And when you do that, you screenshot it, you go over, and you submit to fantasypros.com/contest, and that Debo helmet could be yours because somebody's going to win it. And also don't forget our YouTube channel. We just had all the draft coverage on there. We're going to have more videos coming out. All the podcasts are on there. We got our Fantasy Football Fest coming up this summer. Amazing things going on our YouTube channel. Also amazing things in our Fantasy Pros community at fantasypros.com/chat. So you can join that and join our Discord for free. And of course, upgrade your Fantasy Pros membership. And when you do, you get access to lots of other channels, including AMAs with Derek Brown and, of course, Andrew Erickson and myself, and stages and all kinds of fun things. Have some fun. Let's go. Fantasy football is supposed to be fun after all. I want to thank the sponsor of today's show, and that's Pristine Auction. Head over to pristineauction.com today. That's P-R-I-S-T-I-N-E auction.com. Use that promo code FANTASYPROS. Again, that's FANTASYPROS to get a $5 credit on us and start bidding today on the most amazing sports memorabilia you ever seen in your whole life. This was a fun show, gentlemen. As always, I appreciate your time and your insights and, of course, your Harry Potter references. That'll do it for us. But the story of the game goes on. For Derek Brown, Andrew Erickson, I'm Joey P. We'll see you next time, kids. Avada Kedavra!
Thanks for listening to the Fantasy Pros Football Podcast. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Fantasy Pros and subscribe to our YouTube channel at youtube.com/FantasyPros.
It's Freddie Prinze Jr. and Jeff Dye back in the ring. Wrestling with Freddie makes its triumphant return for an electrifying fourth season. Hey, Jeff, are you ready to rumble our way into an all-new season of Wrestling with Freddie?
You better believe I have. I've been practicing my body slams, and I'm jacked.
All right, don't go injuring yourself now. We'll be highlighting the best stories and matches of the week in wrestling from AEW, WWE, and have one-on-one talks with the best talents in the world of pro wrestling.
Listen to Wrestling with Freddie on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Parents, if you've ever experienced bedtime battles with the kids, I'm going to let you into a little secret. The Koala Moon podcast has revolutionized over 20 million bedtimes, with parents like you calling it life-changing and the perfect nighttime routine. With original kids' bedtime stories and cozy sleep meditations, every episode has been specially designed to make bedtimes a dream. Listen to Koala Moon on the iHeartRadio app, on Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Discover a new educational and interactive podcast, Stories for Kids by Lingo Kids. Our episodes are packed with fun activities. Right, Elliot?
Oh, yes! We went shape hunting around the block, and we found spheres and cubes on the street.
That was great fun. Join Stories for Kids, the Lingo Kids podcast, inspiring you to learn while having fun. Listen to Stories for Kids on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.